Yeah, so when we look at the course of meditation, so many of you are aware there's sort of like a wide variety of objects and perceptions that you can use to balance the mind. And you know, we have the roughly say 40 main objects that we use to help say tranquilize the mind and increase the wisdom faculty of the practitioner. And but these particular meditation objects say like cover a very, very broad focus, because on the level of the mind you can essentially produce any kind of feeling or perception that you wish in order to say balance and stabilize the mind. So, you know, depending what's actually going on both internally, or what's actually happening to you, or what's actually coming in through the five senses externally, that you can make an effort to stabilize the mind. Because when we look at the qualities of the samatha meditation, you know, you've not only just got say peacefulness, but you've also got a state of emotional stability and balance, and you know, you've got patience and tolerance, and you've got a degree of compassion and kindness. You know, in that one state of peacefulness of mind, it could be made up of a number of underlying qualities which essentially can change over time as the months and the years go by. And so, you know, from this very simple practice, you know, we can develop a wide range of both qualities and skills. And you know, even though that the when you look at the core of meditation practice, you know, we're aiming for peacefulness of mind, you know, developing wisdom within the mind, you know, within the two main parameters of meditation. That's, you know, so like 30% of more like 60% of the system. You know, we have sila as the foundation, we have samadhi, and then the wisdom faculty. So theoretically we can say it's like 60% of the overall business, but you've also got a number of underlying supporting factors and qualities as well. So with the business in itself, even though it may appear sort of quite simplistic, you know, you really have to put forth quite a reasonable amount of effort over the years to develop oneself. And, you know, it's something which doesn't necessarily come that easily, because you're opposing those forces which essentially have you stuck in the cycle of birth and death. You know, so we're actually moving against these forces and energies which actually have got us trapped in the rebirth process, which could have been with us for thousands and thousands of lifetimes. So it's not necessarily a breezy thing to eventually to undercut and to slowly erode and eventually eliminate these underlying currents in the mind which keep people bound within the cycle of birth and death. So, you know, people, you know, so maybe say like mainstream people, if you talk about meditation, you know, they may have an understanding of, you know, becoming peaceful, maybe developing more focus, more awareness and whatnot. But ultimately the meditation, you know, you take it to its highest point, you know, it should lead you to the end of rebirth, the end of the path, and the accumulation, the peak point, the peak realization of not only a human being but any being which exists within this universe. So, you know, once the individual has attained the highest realization, let's say purification of mind, but they fully understand the reason why they were born a human being, in a way, you know, all those deep questions, you know, why we are here and where we are going, you know, you get the answers to all those quite profound questions that, you know, once you've achieved that point, there's no reason for you to exist any longer. You know, you've achieved, say, you know, over the probably several lifetimes, full purification of mind through the course of meditation. And then once, you know, you've achieved that highest realization, there's really no point for you to exist any longer. But, you know, that's mainly a monastic kind of perspective. It's not necessarily the perspective of the lay disciples, because they, you know, they have a greater degree of family, personal commitments. You know, they have other duties and responsibilities. So, you know, it's very easy for me to drop lines like this, but you can't necessarily just walk away and abandon your world as you know it, and really sort of put the maximum amount of energy that you can handle into the practice. So with the, you know, with the course, you know, if you like it, look at the big picture, something I always tend to teach people is to, you know, to look at the cause and effect principle. You know, whatever, you know, you do with the practice, actually look at the effect. And if you're moving in a direction which gives rise to, you know, say, you know, especially, you know, those basic principles of, say, peacefulness and increased wisdom and understanding, then essentially you're on track. But, you know, if you're moving in the direction of increasing, say, anger and irritation and hostility, you know, maybe increasing the, say, the passionate nature of the human mind, then you may have to possibly make some corrections. So what we'll do for this session, we'll do just something slightly different. We'll many of you haven't necessarily done the sympathetic joy meditation, and the basis of the mudita sympathetic joy is rejoicing in the prosperity of others except ourselves. Or you can actually, it is possible to do it towards oneself as well, but the sympathetic joy is something which opposes and neutralizes, say, feelings of jealousy and envy. And it's good to experiment just a little with the Brahma Viharas. You know, many of you are familiar with metta, compassion, which are very, you know, very good practices in themselves. But sympathetic joy is, but you know, can be quite useful. You know, just to get a feel for it, because there was a point that a senior monk brought up with me years ago. Because I mean, I don't hardly do this practice at all, but he was saying that with monks who are using the loving kindness, especially the loving kindness practice, to develop very deep samadhi, you know, metta is very useful for that. You know, if the mind is essentially tainted by excessive sensuality, because meditation is focused on the development of the beautiful, the perception of the beautiful, and but if, you know, if you do that for hours every day, eventually it goes to excessive sensuality. So he always recommended mudita. You can actually drop metta and go to mudita and still have this kind of positive, joyful perspective. You know, it is possible to actually even touch on feelings of bliss with mudita, but it doesn't. It's a perception which it's like it generates this attitude of rejoicing in worldly prosperity especially another individual, say like a friend, close friend or family member. So it helps to maintain the purity of mind if, you know, if a person is using metta for, you know, trying to do a very deep samadhi of the jhanas. So what I want you to do is just choose a friend, very, very close friend, and look at the, say, the good qualities that person has, or the successful qualities that that person has, you know, whether they're wealthy, popular, you know, they've got their good looks, they could be very intelligent, very successful at university. So choose that particular quality that that person it excels in, which could possibly be a source of envy with others, and use the this stock formula that, say, for example, the person's name is could be like Rachel. Say, may Rachel never be separated from her, say, material prosperity, her popularity, her wealth, her intellectual capabilities, her successes in life. So may your close friend, your closest friend, never be separated from those outstanding good qualities that they possess. So choose the word formulation which is suitable for you, and then we'll do that for 5 minutes, and then we'll switch to the breath meditation. But sympathetic joy, it helps to increase the positivity, mental energy, and the joy with the breath meditation. So just get yourself in a comfortable position, hands on the lap, the back nice and straight, head upright but comfortable. Make sure there's nothing tight around the waist, the throat. Make sure you can breathe fully into the chest. And just recite that mantra very, very slowly, very relaxed for the next 5 minutes, silently in the mind. switch to the breath meditation. If you can just now focus on the mouth section, the feeling around the mouth and the lips, and watch the breathing cycle on the periphery of that fairly focused area. And so as you're breathing in and out, just focus on the mouth section, and you'll feel the breath on the periphery, and just watch the breathing cycle at that point in a very relaxed way for the rest of the session. you find that the mouth section is too small a focus for you, you can actually go a bit broader and breathe in through the full face, focus on the feelings in the face, and then focus on that with the breath at its center. Some people feel a little bit sleepy. Just breathe fully into the chest section. Just very slow, deep breaths to increase alertness. If you find that the mind's not coming down quick enough, just switch to the investigation, the wisdom practice, and see exactly what you're attached to, what is blocking you, and just examine that just in a very gentle way for about 20 to 30 seconds, and then try to understand that from a full perspective, and then after go back to the breath, and you'll find that the breath will come down at least to a small degree. find that the mind is still a little bit too busy for your liking, you can use just a simple word, say like peace or happiness, as you breathe out with the breath meditation to give you a little bit more stability. So we're coming towards the end of the session, so if you just reflect back and see if you see any change in the peacefulness of the mind. And I'll ring the gong 3 times so you can open your eyes when you're ready. Anybody got any questions on the meditation at all? Okay. I've got maybe 1 or 2. Great, thank you. So, question 1, Caroline from Belgium. I have been falling asleep during long sessions of meditation. Would meditation with short pauses be better? Can short meditation sessions make it difficult to reach deeper and higher states of consciousness? So this lady has been falling asleep during long sessions of meditation. So, I mean, if I was in her shoes, what I would do is, if it's possible to either, say, walk meditation, and if you can't actually walk meditation, say, for example, you've got a small apartment. So say, for example, the person sits for maybe, it could even be 30 minutes, an hour, and then they start to get sleepy or drowsy. Something they could do is just do the standing meditation, just to get up, make sure you're warm, and then focus on the soles of the feet. You know, have the feet maybe 12 inches apart. You can focus on 1 foot or 2 feet, and naturally, because you're standing upright and you've got your eyes open, you won't be able to really slip into drowsiness unless you're really, really, fatigued. And so people, there's other little things as well where people can use, say, like mantras, short or long form mantras to energize the mind, or, they can, say, breathe more deeply, or they could focus on an area of feeling in the body, or do body sweeping, which tends to be more energizing because you're focusing on more core sensations, in the body. But with it, for people who are really interested in samadhi, if you really want to see really deep meditation, most people, you need at least 2 hours, 2 to 3 hours to see a really good state. Like the first hour is really just to get you calm, and the second hour, that's where you really see the benefits. And for anyone who's really interested in getting into jhanas, you're looking at absolute minimum 3 to 4 hours of, sitting and walking at a stretch. That's the kind of sustained effort it takes. And can short meditation sessions make it difficult to reach deeper and higher levels of states of consciousness? It all depends on your capability. I mean, I've heard of some lay disciples, even after 30 minutes, they've gone into a very, very deep state. But it depends on the individual. People have different faculties, and some people may have an incredibly good day, and everything just basically comes together. All the factors come together, and within 30 minutes they could have a samadhi nimitta, or possibly even upachara samadhi. So, and for some people they may need like 3, 4, 5 hours for that kind of state. So it all depends on where you're at with the practice, and time and space, what's actually happening for you. But something I do as well, and I always recommend this, and I've seen this works effectively, is just that very, very light mantra. Practice just one word, just say like a word like peace or happiness, or it could be anything at all. And then just do that, just once every minute, but just do it all day. And half the night, and you'll get that. For people who are really interested in meditation, that background samadhi is always there, and then it usually takes about 3 or 4 days before you really see it. It becomes quite firm, and then no matter when you sit and walk, that the person has already got some sustained energy in the background of the mind, and when you go to sit and walk, you don't have to struggle so much. You can establish the meditation much more quickly than if you start fresh without any previous preparation. But that's, as I mentioned before, that very light meditation, just a simple mantra once every minute, but 18 hours a day, 7 days a week. It's very workable. You can do anything with it. You can work, you can drive, you can use power tools, and you basically won't have accidents, you won't make mistakes. Question two, Vicky from Indonesia: if nimitta comes up, what should I watch, the nimitta or the breath? So what I would do if I was in those circumstances is, if you're doing the breath meditation, the mind gets very, very quiet, gets very calm, and the nimitta comes up, you get to say like a flash, you get the initial, maybe a flashing or maybe a couple of seconds duration. I wouldn't move from the breath. You stay with the breath until the nimitta basically draws you in. The nimitta is like the bridge which takes you to, say, firm concentration. So if the nimitta is unstable and infrequent, you don't go to the nimitta. It's not solid enough. You stay with the breath. It's like an intuitive thing. You stay with the breath right to the point where the nimitta is stable, bright, and it's consistent. It's virtually there all the time, and that kind of nimitta will essentially draw you into the mind and into through Upachara Samadhi to the base of the first jhana. Okie doke. No other questions. We'll finish it there.